God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you, and you are able to unmute and say hello. Try to slide through and see if I see anyone. All right. Do not. Well, if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we will be discussing step 4, and please welcome our panel. We've got Bobby and Mike tonight. And so I'll read a paragraph, and then each of our panel will share for a few minutes or so each. And let me get that ready. All right. Oops, wrong page here. All right, sorry about that, y'all. All right, step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. All right. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways what was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? And I'm gonna let Bobby kick it off.
All right, thank you, Morgan. Thank you, everybody. Bobby Alcoholic, thanks Bobby. For having me. It's great to be here, coming to you from New Jersey. The picture behind me is not the reality, so that's summer's reality, but not now. We have a lot of snow. We're getting more. My clean date is February 17th, 2008. I have a home group. It's a big book study meeting on Wednesday nights up here in Livingston, New Jersey. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor, you know, other guys. And I really never thought I'd say this, but I do owe my life as it is today to the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would never have survived the last year with all of its uncertainty, effects on personal relations, my business, finances, et cetera, if I didn't have a solid foundation and a solid relationship with a power, my higher power that I call God. And he's the problem solver, and I turn my life over to him, and thank God that he's with me and he walks with me every step of the way. And I really was not like that almost 13 years ago. Oh, I'm coming up on 13 years. Let me just jump to the step. When we got to this step, that first paragraph was a really rude awakening for me. This whole program coming into AA was a rude awakening, because when I first came in, with not really of my own choice, but circumstances made me willing, and it was the only way I could get out of a lot of trouble. Everyone told me that you will never be able to drink again for the rest of your life. That knocked me for a loop, because my plan was to go to my deathbed like my grandfather with a drink. And then you guys told me that I had a physical allergy. That's why I couldn't drink anymore. But then you said, I thought, how do I not drink anymore? You know, my mind always wants me to drink, and I had an obsession all the time. That's all I thought about, was when can I get the first drink of the day? And then you told me that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And, you know, I never really thought about a power greater than myself. You know, I was the power in my life. And I was not a religious person. I didn't have a relationship with a God. I was exactly what Bill wrote about in We Agnostics. I was an agnostic. I believed in a greater force in the world, in the universe, but nothing that I had access to or allowed in my life. And then in the third step, I was told I had to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to care of God and give up all control. And I'm just an actor. I'm not the director anymore. I'm not the boss. I'm not the, you know, I'm not the principal. And that was a rude awakening, because that's kind of the way I ran my life and everyone else's life around me. And when it was finally explained to me what that decision was, not just, you know, early AA, I'd go to, you know, meetings and they would just say, hey, just make a decision and move on. But when it was finally really explained to me what it was, something clicked and I did it. It was one of these spiritual moments I had in AA. And I just decided to like let go, and I felt this big weight off my shoulders. But now I'm sitting there with my sponsor and I go, all right, I get it. But how do I do that? What do I do? So then we get to step four, and step four says, all right, we're done with all the teaching you about these things. Now you got to do some work, and you got to work on yourself. And that just rocked me, because, you know, what was wrong with me? You know, what did I thought I was this nice guy, great guy. I would do anything for people. I had no clue, you know, what I really was like. And when we read this paragraph, and it said, the decision that I made was vital and crucial. Okay. It has little permanent effect unless at once I get rid of the things in myself that were blocking me. Blocking me from where? I had no clue. And what things in myself were blocking me from anywhere? I didn't know anything about spirituality or spiritual life until I got here. And then it said, our liquor was but a symptom, not the problem. And for me, before coming here, I always thought, you know, it's just I drank too much and I couldn't stop, you know. And this first paragraph really knocked me down, you know, and it said, you got it. The problem's within you, and we're going to show you how to get rid of it if you're willing. And I had to be willing. And, you know, like a lot of people, I was a little bit of a procrastinator in this step, And it says we should do it at once and launch out vigorously. And it got to the point, it's a cool little story. I was going away for the weekend on a retreat to the Wilson House in Vermont, in East Dorset, where Bill Wilson grew up. And my sponsor told my friends I was going with that I couldn't come home unless I finished my fourth step. And they took that really seriously, and they locked me in the dining room at the Bill Wilson House. And that's where I did most of my fourth step. It was pretty cool. It was very spiritual. But yeah, I had to get down and look. You know, people don't do this because I think they're, you know, they say they don't want to look at themselves. I have a sponsee now who just stuck at this step. He won't do it. But it was the only way for me to get rid of these things and help me be able to get and maintain my connection with God and improve it. And, you know, having to admit I was wrong was like a concept, or that I had a problem was a concept I really couldn't deal with. But I had to. I needed to take an inventory, and I needed to right all the wrongs. And if I didn't do that, you know, it says we get physically, if we do the steps and recover spiritually, we get physically and mentally better. And for me, when I usually talk about earlier steps, people say, you know, it's the disease of the body and the mind and the spirit. Well, you know, you have an allergy, you know, you the only way to deal with that is to not take the first drink. But how do I stop? How do I stay stopped? I came here to stop. I want to stay stopped. The only way to do that is to improve my spiritual condition, because it's my spiritual unmanageabilities. It's the problems, me, deep down, that drive my mental obsession to drink. So even though we sort of get to the spiritual condition third, to me, that's the first thing I got to deal with. You know, if I work on that spiritual condition and I'm right with God and I'm right with myself and I'm right with my fellows, I'm not thinking about a drink. And God removes that. He's my problem solver. It's not my own power. And it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And it's a matter of life and death. It tells us that right here. And that was another concept that I didn't really grasp until I got to AA. You know, being an alcoholic and drinking, either actively drinking, you know, that could kill you, not just by, you know, disease or liver disease, anything like that, but car crashes, falling and hitting your head. I was fortunate none of that happened. But, you know, I had to improve. I became really to believe that this was a matter of life and death. You know, that if I ever drank again, and I hope I don't, if I ever drank again, you know, it just leads to dying. And I've seen the progression get that much worse. So I've done four steps, a bunch of them. And I've gone through the rest of the work to deal with that. And I think I'll let Mike share.
Thank you. It's all you, Mike.
Thanks, Bobby. Excuse me. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. Simple Actions is my home group, and that that first part of what Morgan read, being convinced that self manifested in various ways, was what had defeated me. I think I was convinced of that, and certainly and believed it then, but the light bulb really hadn't come on for me by this point. I think I'd gotten a good sense and understanding of how screwed I was, that I had a problem that I could not solve on my own as an alcoholic, but I couldn't see the truth about me, and I had no idea the power resentment had held over me for so many years. And I understand the word resentment to be broken down as resentiment, meaning re-feeling. And that's, I know, looking back, and I'm not exempt from engaging in this today, that starting a resentment and nurturing a resentment is refueling the event, the wrong, real or imagined, whatever. You know, if I tell myself a lie 9 times, I think it's the truth. But it is refueling it. And while resentment is the number one offender, and I agree that it certainly is, the anger and fear that are involved in that play a role as well. And that doesn't change. The main thing that jumped out at me is that doesn't change once we're past the fourth step. Resentment and the fear and anger involved in it are still the number one offender. And I don't think there's anything that could take me out of this program as quickly as that. At my sponsor's guidance and prodding, I sat down to write this out, like the example shown in the book. And I could see page after page where in every situation there I have a role. There were a couple I thought that, okay, I'm free and clear in these. That was clear. That little misconception was straightened out later by a sponsor and a home group member. But still, the light bulb really didn't come on for me. It took the next step for that to happen. But I could see that in all these situations, I had a role. There I was. Some of them were 15 years old or older even. I was 30 when I came in here and was told to start with a page or two for under the age of 10 and then do a page per year or however many pages were needed per year in age after that. And I could see that I was involved in all these situations. But I think it took some additional maturity and sobriety to realize exactly how grave resentment can be. And again, it doesn't stop being the number one offender simply because I've done a fourth step or I've done 12 fourth steps or whatever. It stays the number one offender, I believe. And that's all I got.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you both. All right, I'm going to share the next reading, which will be on page 65. Right. Whoa. Ugh. All right, there we go. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that, this is page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Right, Bobby?
All right, thanks. Yeah, to drink is to die. That's what I was talking about before. And if I don't get right with myself on the inside and make that connection with God, you know, the insanity of alcohol returns. And I learned all about that in the second step. And we learn about that from the stories, you know, of Fred and Jim and the jaywalker. I, you know, I don't want the insanity anymore. I don't want insanity in my life in any aspect of it. And when I was actively drinking, you know, I could, You know, some people call themselves chaos creators. I'm sure I stirred up some chaos and created, you know, a lot of problems with my resentments and fears and anger. You know, anger is a luxury that we alcoholics can't afford. Our literature tells us. And, you know, what better, continue to give us more reasons to do this, you know. Any life which includes deep resentment only leads to futility, unhappiness. So I'm in AA and I was unhappy enough to begin with, and I didn't want to live the rest of my life like that. So that's when I asked someone to show me, be my sponsor, who I could see live the happy life. Because if I wasn't going to drink the rest of my life, I didn't want to be miserable and I wanted to live the right way. And to do that, I had to go back. I went back and remembered as many names as I could, put them down, as many institutions, as many principles. And I put them down and I wrote about them. And, you know, the word wrong was always a tough one for me because I always had to be right. I always thought I was right and I always had to be right. And I couldn't, Bobby, wrong, those words didn't end up in the same sentence, not out of my lips, certainly out of other people's. You know, I was like, I don't know if you saw Happy Days, the Fonz, who there's an episode where he cannot say the word wrong. They try to get him to say it and he goes, okay, that was me, you know? And I could argue, and I am a lawyer by trade. I was like this when I was a youngster. I could argue my way in and out and around anything that was going on. So I always twisted the facts and twisted the story. So I was right and you were wrong. And, you know, now I see how that was not a good way to live and what it did to me inside. Because if I tread all over you, no matter what you did, you know, my reaction was to come back at you even stronger. And then after that, I would sit there and I'd say, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. And when I was drinking, then I would just drink to forget or to cover up that feeling. And I had a fear of, you know, seeing you, and I, you know, had a resentment. I didn't want to see you. I was the person that walked down a different aisle in the supermarket. I have to run into you, or walk, you know, across the street to avoid you, or do something, turn away, because I couldn't face my truth until I went through this fourth and fifth step. I had to consider it carefully and. Not having gotten to the third and fourth columns yet, what do I see? I think everyone else is wrong. And unfortunately, some people stop there, you know, but that's, those people don't get better and they stay angry. And I've seen a lot of angry people in AA, and usually it's the ones that haven't done these steps. You know, but then I realize that I can't be that way. And I need to do something different. And that for me was so huge to realize I have to change. You know, I have to change the way I am, or else I'm going to go on in my life being angry at people, places and things, and acting accordingly. And I had to stop blaming everybody else and really look at inside, look at Bobby and say, what have you done? You know, and we get to the fourth column and we turn it around. What was my role in things? And not an easy place to be or think about. I don't think we've gotten there yet, so I'll wait a little while on that. But the book tells us this business of resentment is infinitely grave. Again, the death talk. And why? Because either I'm going to live miserably and be a walking zombie because I'm in fear and anger all the time, or I'm going to go back out and drink and I'm going to die. Because alcohol is not a friend. Alcohol is a foe, and alcohol wants us dead, settles for us drunk. You know, I've walked through the sunlight of the spirit. I don't want to be shut out from that ever again. I don't want to be in the darkness of life and the darkness of dealing with my inner self. You know, when it all comes down to it, when I go off, if I do something that's not in a spiritual way, I'm you know, I'm slipping back, or I could slip back into the old ways. I lived that way for so long. That's why I really work hard on the 10th step and 11th step, because I have to grow in effectiveness and understanding. And that means I have to do not just one fourth step. I've done quite a few, but I also have to do a mini fourth step every day, because I got to make sure I'm right with the world and I'm right with my fellows and I'm not harboring anything. And if I do, you know, now it's great because I get rid of it right away, like it tells us in 10, but I know that. And the difference is I feel it now. Like if I know, if I say or do something that, you know, is bad by me, I feel it right away. And I'm almost, I can't stand sitting in it anymore, you know, and without alcohol to numb it, I've learned to take care of it. And I do that at work. I've called adversaries after an argument and made an amends for something I might have said, and it catches people off guard so much. But the effect is amazing. And once you do a ninth step and you go through that amends process, you'll get to see it. It's of course there's going to be a few people who are going to send you on your way and then say some not nice things, but most of the ones I did, you know, it was an amazing event and left there with a better feeling about myself and people's feelings about me, and a better connection with, you know, another human being that I may have hurt in the past. Mike?
Mike, I'm an alcoholic. To conclude that this world and the people in it were often wrong was as far as I ever got prior to recovery. And thinking back about that initial list, there were things other people had did, and sure, I played a role, but whatever anybody else had done, I had no control over. It was through my selfishness, self-centeredness, my spiritual sickness, I guess, overall, that I carried these resentments. I had no control over what anybody did, however significant or insignificant, and I still have no control over anybody in this world. Through my selfishness and self-centeredness, I was at the mercy of whatever happened. Completely powerless to have any sort of peace or serenity. And frankly, full disclosure, I barely knew what the word serenity meant before recovery. I think I'd experienced so little of it. But again, I was just at the mercy of all these things I had no control over. I think even today, most people in this world are living whatever way they're living, and they're perfectly fine with it. And that's none of my business anyway. But to get a resentment today over something that I had no control over is nothing short of insanity. And I didn't learn to see my role in things. It took this process for me to easily see my role in anything. It really did. I mean, sure, there had to be times where every now and then on a, you know, a blue moon or something, I would see, oh yeah, well, I played a role in this. Yeah, I was kind of a jerk. I was selfish, whatever. But most of the time it was just me pointing the finger at other people. And I've got it underlined in my book, to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? And that's referring to the life that includes deep resentment, leading only to futility and unhappiness. I think the same thing applies to the life that includes a lot of fear or worry about the future, about things I have no control over anyway. And of course, anger, any of those things shut me off from the sunlight of the spirit. The two I cannot be in both at the same time. It's simply not possible. That is not the nature of the sunlight, of the spirit, and it's certainly not the nature of anger, fear, worry, resentment. Those two, you never find those in the same place at one time. And I would I would drink over those things. I would be resentful without drinking. The drinking would really get me going and get me fired up, and it would bring up new things. I'd be refilling them. I mean, it could be as simple as and as obvious as I would have drank myself to death. I would have never got in here, never got desperate enough. I'm certainly glad that I did. And I would have been miserable the whole time. And this is in a broader sense, and I mentioned it in other contexts, that I don't fear the idea of drinking again. If I feared anything, which I don't really, I mean, you know, the uncertainty of the future, but can you ever be completely free of that? If I feared anything, it would be the return of the misery. It would be the return of things like the book describes right here. Be living like that again. My will fails, and it's constant, and it's always failing, and I'm angry, and I'm resentful, and I have no control over anything anyway. It would be that misery. That's what I would fear if I was going to fear something. I wouldn't fear the return of the next drink. But through the states described in what we're reading tonight, I would easily drink myself to death. I was already on that path. That's all I got.
Thank you both. Right. The next reading is on page 66 as well. Right. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Bobby.
Thanks, Morgan. This step really got me going on the fact that I had to smash the delusion that I could control everybody and everything, and that this was the way to do it. Because that's what my mind would tell me, and that's what my being felt like. And I love this paragraph about realizing the people who wronged us were spiritually sick too. So here's what happened with me. 2 days after my arrest, I went to visit a counselor, and he handed me Big Book, told me to read the 9-step promises, said, if you do this, these things will come true. Now go home and read the book. And I went home and read the book by myself. No sponsor, no AA, nothing. Just read it. And I got to this page 66. And here I am, I'm Mr. I'm always right. I'm not, my anger is justified. I don't, whatever. I'm in control. And then I read, and I only read parts of the words off the page because now I know what it really means. But we realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. They, like ourselves, were sick too. And I was just like, yes, finally, someone agrees with me that the people around me that I'm having that I have trouble with, they got problems too. It's not just me. They're sick. And that's all I took from reading this book all by myself, all the way through. obviously not the message I was supposed to get in that form, but you know, that's where my alcoholic mind and thinking were at the time. I was so self-centered and selfish that it was just all about me. And, you know, what is this paragraph really telling us? My sponsor really hammered home the line from the 10th step that love and tolerance of others is our code. And when I live that way, that's a result of having a spiritual awakening and understanding that, you know, that's what I'm here for, to help others. And it's not just other alcoholics, but we're practicing these principles in all our affairs. I'm to be of service to everybody because that's what God wants for his children, right? It's for me to be of service. And we say that in the prayers, like even in the 7-step prayer, grant me the strength to go out from here to do your bidding and for it to help you and my fellows. So now tolerance, you know, that was a big one for me. And that flows right out of resentments and anger, because if you wronged me, I had no tolerance for you. If you didn't want to do exactly what I wanted to do, I had no tolerance for you. And I certainly didn't have any love, you know, and love took on a whole new meaning for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't, you know, like love of the opposite sex or love of family, but love of fellow man, meaning, you know, I'm here to help you. I'm here to serve God and whatever it takes. And I want what's best for you, just like I want what's best for me. And it's such a, you know, Mike said he didn't know what the word serenity meant. I didn't either. And I certainly didn't realize how racked by fear I was. But when you live this way and you're not in conflict with every other person, you can have serenity, you know, as long as I'm not in conflict with myself either. And that way, that I do by, turning my life over to God. So the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, imagined or not, you know, how many of us, if you've done amends, done a 4-step and done amends, have called up people. I had one recently, this past summer, a woman that I had wronged about 25 years ago. And then she moved away and I didn't know how to get in touch with her. And out of the blue, she called me about another friend of ours. I wanted to see how he was doing. And I said, yeah, I'm glad you called. I've been needing to talk to you, you know, and I made the amends and I told her what I thought I had done wrong to her. And she just looked at me and she just said on the phone, I don't even remember that, you know? So I was sitting in this knowing I had thought I had did something wrong that had hurt her for years. And it was, who was it affecting? It was affecting me. And it was, you know, eating away at me. And I was able to get free of that. And those are the kind of things that spiritual unmanageabilities that block me from a spiritual life and from my connection with God. So I have to understand it. And even if people want to do something wrong or they do, you know, I can't, like Mike said, I can't control what other people do. I can only control my reaction to what they do. And I don't have to let them bother me and I don't have to judge them. If someone does something wrong, lies, cheats, whatever, you know, that's their business. And it's not for me to call them out unless they ask me. It's not for me to hold a grudge against them, not for me to be angry at them. But to look at them, just like this prayer says, you know, the sick man prayer, this person has done something wrong. You know, how can I be helpful? And then I turn the thought, I ask God to help me from becoming angry, because if I become angry, we know what happens. You know, it leads to worse things. And thy will be done. I say that many, many times throughout the day. I say it at the end of the serenity prayer. And I have to remember all the time to ask God to give me the strength to carry out his will for me. So in this third column of this step, I'm looking at the way the anger has affected me. And most of it, you know, we have the word fear next to it. And we're not doing fear tonight, but I can tell you that most of my issues from that column were fear-based. And fear, a tremendously bad driving force was in my life. And you know, what is fear? Fear of the future, fear of the past, that shit, you're just projecting and just not living in the present. And like Mike said, I mean, especially now in this time period of COVID, you know, a lot of us probably having some financial, I'll use the word anxiety, and you don't know what's going to come on down the pike. But one thing I've learned from experience is that if I have faith instead of fear, I get through it. And if I rely on God and my higher power, I do get through it. If I start thinking about myself and relying on myself and getting into me and getting angry that the economy's tanking and getting angry that, you know, there's no cases going to court and this and that, it's not going to do me any good. It's not going to do me any good. And it's just going to be injurious to me mentally and spiritually, and might lead me to drink. And if I drink, I'm in trouble. And if I don't drink and I'm spiritually unfit and I'm feeling miserable and fear, you know, those emotions tend to take over our actions. And then you don't know what you're going to do. And I don't like living like that anymore. It's just not for me. And so we try to avoid retaliation and argument. I certainly try to avoid retaliation. And listen, I'm a litigator, so I'm in a profession where those two things are pretty prevalent, retaliation and argument. But I've learned how to do it the right way. And it's very effective, a lot more effective than the old way of trying to shove something down people's throats and getting mad and angry when they don't do exactly what you want to do. And the analogy to sick people, we wouldn't treat, you know, someone had cancer, I wouldn't be mad at them for having cancer. You know, I would help them. And if I see other people that are acting sick, like I used to act, and that's another thing. One of the ways I went through the steps, in the fourth step, they do a realization exercise. And I sit down and I write the realization that all these things I'm complaining about that other person, I've done to other people too. And when I realize that, something inside, you know, something flips it inside me to know, well, I thought they did something wrong. I did the same thing. So they, wow, I was wrong. So I got to stop. And it's just one other exercise in this step that has helped me to see the truth of myself. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Bobby. I love that last part you touched on realizing that I've done all these things. And that's an excellent exercise. And I didn't, in my last share, didn't mean to jump ahead. But as soon as Morgan started reading, I realized I had. But here it is again. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. And I did that. I made that possible. My resentments had nothing to do really with those other people, not the resentment. I kept that going. I kept feeding it. I kept re-feeling it, re-sentiment. And I was at the mercy of things, people. Again, most people are just fine with the way they live, no matter how sick and twisted. I was just fine with the way I lived. Absolutely fine with it. Unhappy at times, but I had many good times too. And it was when alcohol began, it worked less as a solution, and then it worked even less still, and the misery just wouldn't go away. And then other consequences were coming of the boss that had let me come back to work time after time after time quit, fired me, and let it stick for a while. And that helped the hopelessness hit. But getting back to what we've read, because I will drink myself to death, and I was already on that path, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, because if I was carrying these resentments out of my own selfishness and self-centeredness to begin with. So whether the wrongs the other person had done and how they're a bastard or you know, jerk or whatever, whether that is actual or not, doesn't really matter. I believe it and I'm reacting based on it. And I would use that stuff to drink myself to death and to make myself miserable. Heck, maybe I would have ended up putting a gun in my mouth. I never had the nerve. I came close a couple times, but didn't have the nerve to do it. And I'm looking back, I'm glad I didn't have the nerve to do it, but yet there I was. And that was... So that would have been a probably would have gone on the death certificate as a suicide. Well, what about the things that led up to that? The misery brought on by my nature and the way I was living. And it is a very helpful exercise to realize, as the book talks, I love this part of the book, there is no problem in my life to which this book is not the answer, that this book does not have the solution for. There is no problem in my life that is not covered in here and addressed. That to realize the people that wronged us were spiritually sick. Well, I'm not in control of anybody today either. It wasn't just before recovery. I'm in no more control of anything in this world than I was before. This exercise is very helpful. And for me, it comes back to the fact that the resentment was all about me. It had nothing to do with the other person. And a couple years ago, I heard somebody share that, well, I was told if I have a resentment towards somebody that I should pray for that person for 2 weeks and the resentment will go away. And that's crap, because the resentment doesn't have anything to do with that person anyway. It's not about that person. It's my ego looking for a way to rationalize getting out of doing this work and then going to make some amends. How am I going to pray for somebody when the resentment doesn't have anything to do with them? The resentment's about me, my spiritual sickness, selfishness, and self-centeredness. Back to this exercise, I found this exercise to be very helpful. It is always a very positive experience when somebody is in this world is acting in whatever way, or simply circumstances, life, what have you, and I just take it in stride. Or I look back and see the truth about myself and maybe shudder a little bit inwardly thinking, oh my gosh, there I was and could be again. I did that and much worse. And of course the text includes God in this. I can't solve this stuff by my own. I gotta have help. And I'm glad to have it. That's all I got. Morgan.
Thank you both. That was awesome. Alrighty. Our next reading is going to be on page 67. All right. Is this the last one? I believe this is the last one. This will be our last reading tonight. All right. Referring to our list again. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. All right, about 4 minutes apiece, if y'all want, or less. It's all good.
All right. So boy, this paragraph and this column, you know, because it wasn't on the page before, so a lot of people don't understand that it's there, but this part of the fourth step inventory is the place where my pride and ego got knocked down, where I was forced to become humble and truly, truly look at myself and the way I reacted to what went on in the world. And, you know, me selfish, me dishonest, I was me self-seeking or frightened. Yeah, I would give you frightened. I was certainly... frightened a lot. I had a lot of fear coming into AA. But even the part of, you know, because some of the resentments I had, I would look and I'd say, well, I didn't really do much wrong there. What, you know, but the other person did. But even if they did wronged me, what was going, was I harboring the anger and the resentment? Was I allowing myself to think and act that way? And, you know, my sponsor taught me not just, we don't just look at causes and conditions, but we look at our motives. And what was my motive for doing something? Or, you know, what was, and then we'd look at the question my sponsor always asks me whenever something is bothering me and I call him up. His first question is, well, what's your motive and what was your role in it? And looking at my role in things, this is where things really got sticky. And I remember going down this, I did each column one at a time. I'm going down the fourth column and each name, each institution, each principal, all those four things, you know, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, almost every resentment. I had each of those. And I remember writing it each time, you know, like, and like I was getting so bored, you know, but it was there. And then this is where I really felt that leveling of my ego, because after a while, I just started looking up this stuff that I was putting down and going, you were really like this. Oh my God. You used to think you were such, you know, such a good person. Not that I was a terrible person, but you know, you used to think that I didn't do anything wrong, that it was always somebody else, that I wasn't causing any problems for anybody. And this writing this over and over again made me realize that my view of life and being, you know, living the right way wasn't right. And it was, I don't know if depressing is the right word, because I felt like it was helping me to get better and to become what the people who were my sponsors had become. You know, I went to people who had a spiritual awakening. You could tell they lived a different life, and I listened to them and the way they spoke and the way they talked and the way they carried themselves, you could tell that they had changed. And I really felt as I did this column and I kept getting more and more, you know, going down the lists, I really started to feel. And maybe that's, I guess that's the purpose of this. It really cut me down to size, you know, and it really showed me that it really wasn't doing, living life the right way. And I needed to change that. And I wasn't sure yet how that was going to happen. But like everything else going through this book, I was just told to be willing and trust the process, trust the experience, and just do the next thing you're told. Because when you get through all of it, you see how much it works and how awesome life becomes. So, you know, and my sponsor was like, you got to finish this. And we're meeting right away, you know, like a few days later. And I was glad we did, because I was kind of sitting in this realization about the way I lived life. And I almost couldn't wait to tell somebody, you know, because that freeing feeling of sitting down with your sponsor and doing your fifth step, it just feels so good. It gets the weight off your, you know, the weight off your chest, the weight off your shoulders. And I just started to feel free. You know, I really was starting to feel free by doing that. And, you know, you get your crap out and spirit of the sunlight of the spirit comes in, you get a connection with God. And then live by those principles. And it's worked for me. If you're going through this, please don't get hung up here. It's just, it's a process, but it works and it will pay off in the end. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks.
Hey everybody, I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic. I have never gotten anywhere by looking at what somebody else did. And it's great that the book says, for somebody going through this, being taken through this by a sponsor for the first time, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. The other person, whatever he or she did, isn't even relevant if I'm to move past something I have a problem with. Where were we to blame? I've got that part highlighted and underlined. And even today, that's the first thing addressed. Brian, just to echo what Brian said, if I bring something to my sponsor, I call it telling on myself. Hey, I need to tell on myself about this. It will, at the very least, almost instantly take the strength out of it, take the wind out of my sails. And often, in so many cases, I already know what my role is, and I'm telling on myself, just ratting myself out with that too. But if there's any hesitation, it's, well, Mike, what's your role in this? Or Mike, here's what I see. Here's what I hear. And none of it is about that other person or whatever situation or life circumstance. And it is more subtle that this is that that fourth column. What was my role? Where was I wrong? And did we go into the next paragraph? I don't believe we went to the next one. That's right. This is the last reading for tonight. But that common thread in my being, selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened, that was through at least close to every single incident. And this was worth every bit of effort. The fourth step was worth every bit of effort, even though I was lazy, had to be prodded by my sponsor, had to get some negative consequences through my self-centeredness, and then be the first thing out of his mouth would be, well, how are you doing on that four step? Okay, already, I'll get on it. And or I was a procrastinator, which is a $5 word for lazy in most cases, and certainly was mine, but it paid off in a big way, although there were two, I can still remember them from the first fourth step. There were two situations where I thought, well, nothing gives an alcoholic gratification like thinking I'm the victim. I really don't think, taking an honest look at it, and I don't think I had a role in these. Yeah, that matter was cleared up in the next step. I thought there were a couple where they can't nail me on this because I had to do, I won't jump ahead to that. I had to go over my four step with more than one person, two people plus my sponsor. And one of them had to be a woman. And it all came down to, where was I to blame? What was my role? What was my motive? And part of what the effort in this step produced was a clarity of vision that I had never experienced prior in life, where I could begin to see, and very quickly, my role in something that would often diffuse whatever feelings I was having. I would see my role. I could see how none of this has anything to do with me, but so why make it about me? And then I just move on. That's part, one of the many things the effort put into this produced. And I am just glad I got the opportunity to get into this program. And that's all I got.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you both. That was awesome. Thank you for a great meeting. I will let everybody unmute at the end. All right. Scroll down here. It's so bad with all these tabs open. I don't know if I'll ever get it right. All right. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. I believe David has put the Zoom link to our PayPal button in the chat. If you'd like to donate, the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? We'll take a quick one. Anybody's got one? I'm looking through. Right, I don't see any. Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? Awesome. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here in the Zoom room after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, I will let everybody thank our panel again at the very end. And could I get BJ real quick to read the last two paragraphs on page 164 of Vision for You?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you guys so much. It was really good meeting.
All right.
A Vision for You from the Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Reading, and we will go ahead and close this meeting up with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks,
all
guys.
So much.
Thank you, Bobby, Mike, Morgan.
Thank you, Bobby.
Great job,
thank
Mike.
You. I love hearing thank anyone talk about you, the Bobby. BBA. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're
everyone.
In my tribe.
I did it without mentioning it. Just in case.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Thank you both. That was a blast.
You guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Based in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Bobby. That was awesome.